Live from the WNPR building located less than a mile from what Hartford State Senator Fanfara describes as a drug-selling bazaar for suburbanites who drive from their comfortable communities. So don't miss out, suburbanites, all right? It's the Wheelhouse. This is Colin McEnroe, and I'm substituting for John Dankosky, who, this is kind of exciting, is out in California. He has actually not even that small a role in the revival of the series Full House. He plays DJ's second husband. She's gotten divorced, and I don't know. I don't know too much about the actual plot line, but I know he's going to be great anyway. It's Administrative Professionals Day today, in addition to being Earth Day. Administrative Professionals Day. So don't hug your administrative professionals because you don't do that anymore. But you should do something nice for your administrative professionals. I think that used to be Secretary's Day. Anyway, we've got a lot of excitement here for you today. But first, we'll talk about the state budget. Just kidding. Joining us right now is Christine Stewart. She is the heart, soul, and spine of CT News Junkie. And also with us, my colleague on the Hartford Current Sunday editorial page, Kevin Rennie, also host of the blog Daily Ructions and a former state legislator himself. So we've got all kinds of things to talk about. And towards the end of the show today, we're going to bring in ace newsman Jeff Cohen to help us go through all of the complexities of Hartford, which is only slightly less difficult to follow than Game of Thrones and Wolf Hall put together. But anyway, that's coming up later. We're going to start with some statewide issues, including things like casinos. And Kevin wants to know why national candidates only come, if they come at all, to Connecticut, to a small strip of land between Westport and Greenwich. We'll come to all that. But first, we just have to talk about the budget because it's so darn exciting. And so, Christine, maybe you can begin by telling us how and why the Republican minority in the General Assembly has decided to issue its own budget. Do we know what's in that budget?
We don't know what's in that budget yet, so it's going to be released later on this week. So for the first time, the Republicans actually wanted to come out with a budget before the Democratic response to the governor's budget in order to, I guess, be more relevant or hope that the Democrats would actually include some of their ideas in their budget proposal, even if they're not going to say that they are Republican ideas. So that's going to happen later on this week, and everybody's going to ignore it. But at some point,
everybody's going to ignore it.
You're not going to ignore it, are you?
No,
the Democrats are probably going to take some of those ideas, but they're not going to give the Republicans credit for it.
No, but people have – I mean, it will be recognized where they came from. I think that's the point of getting it out there first, because there is a desperate need for ideas, and if it means saving some money or fixing some of the messes in the budget, I think they're probably willing to give up some ideas and, of course, or give up some credit to the other side. And then, of course, in the end, however, some of the ideas that are included that may come from the Republicans, mostly the Senate, I think, they'll all vote against. But they still will have the satisfaction of knowing that some of their ideas were
there's my idea, I'm voting against, and I'm
not voting for it. But that's just we're unlikely to have a bipartisan budget agreement because the Democrats have the numbers enough numbers, certainly in the Senate, to work it out within their own caucus.
The last time I want to say that there was a bipartisan budget agreement was probably during the last year of the Rell administration?
Kind of, yes.
For the most part?
Mostly, I think the Senate – it was more bipartisan in the Senate than in the House, as I recall. But that,
yes, it was bipartisan in the Senate.
I have no memory of any of this. But I mean, that's
they
not
used to vote on budgets together.
Yeah,
they used
not because it didn't happen, but I just erased it from my mind.
Yes.
So in the trailer for the budget, the exciting trailer that hit movie screens this week for the Republican budget, Christine, it seemed as though – I mean, it's hard to develop a Republican alternative to a Malloy and Democratic budget where there's sort of no money for anything and just programs are being mercilessly slashed all over the place. So they kind of went in the other direction, it seemed a little bit anyway, saying, well, no, maybe we should put some money back in for, you know, for women who don't have very much money and need health insurance.
Yeah. So, you know, lawmakers actually on both sides of the aisle have been appalled at the safety net cuts that Governor Malloy made in his budget and have been talking about how exactly and where best to put some of that money back. And I think that I don't think the Democrats are going to be able to return, you know, $600 million in cuts to the budget and to the safety net services, but they're going to do a portion of that. So there's still going
to
be cuts.
See, Kevin, this is the way to help the Republican Party find its heart and make it become the party of yes again. It's for the Democrats to be so incredibly mean that they have no choice as the loyal opposition.
Well, there are interesting divides forming in that there are plenty of Republicans who understand the importance of these social service programs. In fact, many of these programs started under Republican governors. And so some of the caricatures are going to be thrown out. And Governor Malloy is getting a reputation, certainly at the legislature and in among people who provide social services, as hating them, just hating social services.
There is actually every day there is a parade of people who either benefit from social services or advocates of those people at the state capitol every day, parades.
But I mean, I guess his answer would be, well, what else is there to cut? What am I going to cut? Well, except for Aer Lingus, maybe.
Well, I think, you know, one of the things is, you know, this is very much a business of symbols. And that was a terrible mistake to give those enormous raises on Christmas Eve.
You think?
And it shows that, you know, when they really want to, and I think the public believes this, when they really want to, they can find the money.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, we're giving raises to the people who are not smart enough or, you know, not capable enough to talk to legislators about where to find alternatives.
Yes.
To the governor's budget. So,
hey, I just realized, you know, you guys were talking about bipartisan budgets. In the past, they've been bipartisan. We have an opportunity which should never be foregone to get Marty Looney, his voice onto the show here. So here's a cut from the leader of the Senate, Marty Looney, about, you know, how this budget process can be done in a really nice way.
Obviously, budgets have traditionally always been partisan documents to some extent. And we have always the situation where the majority party comes out with a budget proposal, and at the end, usually the minority party will offer amendments to that budget, often sometimes for partisan benefit to try to make the majority members cast votes on things that are painful to them to have to do. But if we can find a way to find some common ground and moving toward greater bipartisanship on the budget, I'm certainly all in favor of that.
I wasn't really listening. What did he say?
Well, I let Republicans into the room then.
Yeah.
He said what we're saying.
What you're saying. Exactly. Make it a nice process. So let me just ask you this as a former state legislator. Is there really a better way to do all this? I mean, it always seems like it turns into kabuki of the sort that we've been describing here today.
Is there a better way? I think there's a different way. And I do think that there's been a lot less communication with the Malloy administration between in the run-up to the budget process, with not much communication with key legislators and the administration. Ben Barnes strikes me as a particularly unpleasant personality and getting worse. And when he pronounced right after the election last year that Connecticut was in a permanent fiscal crisis, that would suggest that you might want to reach out to some legislators to talk about the budget and how they're going to address that. And with the kind of cuts that they've proposed, and also with the numbers not adding up in the right at the start, right at the beginning, I do think they alienated natural allies. And the other thing, a part of it is legislators take the budget very seriously, and it is one of the issues where you can surmount some of the partisan divide that naturally takes place, particularly right after an election.
They definitely alienated the legislature this year.
Yeah.
Is neither of you going to tell the really funny joke that you were both telling before we went on the air? Is it like a secret joke?
Oh, no. It's definitely not a secret joke. I mean, it would be very funny if the legislators took the governor's budget and voted it down.
Voted it up and passed it and made it sign it. The cruelest thing they could do to the governor is
the smartest thing they could have done.
To pass the budget that he proposed, which doesn't work. Right. And then he'd have to sign this terrible budget.
The next day, just say, you know, here it is.
He'd have to veto his own budget. Yeah.
He would have to, right. And the things that they could have gotten out of him because his people would have tried to get a lot of no votes.
Right.
We would have more judges than ever.
Right. And yeah, no, absolutely. And Themis would be using his parking space. All right. So we got to move on here to although I could talk budgets all day. We need to talk also about casinos because, in fact, the Titanic on fire continues to sail up the Connecticut River in the form of the new casino plan. Now, Christine, you've been really covering this very closely. And there's various towns, as we know, to the north of Hartford that have the name Windsor in them.
Yes.
That's essentially all we know at this point.
Correct.
No, we know also that, for example, the guy from South Windsor tried to tap the brakes a little bit this week and made a little proposal like, man, maybe we need to slow down. Maybe we need to change this bill a little bit. Maybe we need to, you know, have one casino instead of three and a little bit more time for towns to, you know, think these things over. And maybe there should be a referendum. They said, no, keep moving, right?
Right, exactly. There needs to be some sort of master amendment that they're going to do, you know, leadership's going to do behind closed doors. So far what we have is we have the town of Windsor saying, which is where I live, saying, no way, no casino, doesn't fit our character, we don't want you. We have on Monday, Enfield, town council, according to the Hartford Courant, was like, they were going to pass a similar resolution in Windsor, but then they said, we're going to keep an open mind, you know, maybe.
They said usually in Enfield we'll do just about anything, but,
yeah.
But maybe not this.
So, and then last night we have East Windsor saying, yeah, we'd like to, you know, seriously explore this.
And I live in South Windsor.
Yes.
And we're all part of the original Mother Windsor. And the crack in the wall was always going to be East Windsor.
No, yes. Why is that? Just because they got a lot of flat land and they don't know what to do with it? Why?
Well.
You'd rather not say why?
No, I think that, okay. I think East. No, I'll say.
It's Vegas, baby.
East Windsor has had trouble with economic development.
Mm-hmm.
And one reason is it doesn't have a lot of a sewer system in it. So that's a big problem with economic development. And there are some spots in East Windsor that sort of suggest themselves for this terrible idea and right by the highway. And so people were talking about it immediately thinking, oh, no, could someone please get that movie theater going again? Everybody go to the Big Y.
The Showcase Cinemas in East Windsor kind of has frontage on I-91.
Yes.
You can see it from I-91.
Mm-hmm.
But right next to that is where the Walmart used to be.
Right.
And so there used to be this Walmart, which moved across the street. So there's this vacant building
right next to the Showcase Cinema.
But there's a Big Y at the end of it, which has been struggling since the Walmart left.
East Windsor, come for the casino, stay for the sewers.
Because
the casino, they'd have to put in sewers, right? Really good sewers.
Windsor quickly said, no, we don't want this. I think there was a general feeling of, no, this is a bad idea, except for one spot, and that was East Windsor. And I represented East Windsor for my brief time in the state Senate and South Windsor for more years and did work with East Windsor. And I just thought East Windsor's politics is very unusual and they're going to be susceptible to this.
Well, and the tribes have said, you know, I said there's four towns between Hartford and Springfield,
right.
Mass. You know, are you looking just at those four towns? And they said that they're looking at the broader I-91 corridor,
right.
Which would also include like something like Bloomfield or
Vernon.
Even though it's not it, yeah, East Hartford actually was one of the other ones mentioned.
Actually, my people are from Windsorville, part of East Windsor. We should have hung on to our land. Clearly. Also, I'm one quarter.
Sold it to an Indian tribe.
Well, no, I am one quarter ruby throated Pegasus.
This is going to be a very tricky situation.
I find it morally tricky. I mean, Jepson this week is saying you might endanger the compact.
Correct.
By doing this. And then on the other hand, you know, we know that at the federal level, they're changing the rules a little bit where there's potential for recognition of more tribes here in Connecticut. And there's John has brought this up in the past, but there seems to I'm kind of morally troubled by the incredible fight we're putting up to make sure Scaticokes and Pegasus and Eastern Pequots and ruby-throated hummingbirds don't get their tribal recognition, because God forbid they should do some more casinos while we try to create more casinos.
Well, I was in the legislature, very involved in the first fight over the Indian Gaming Act and in support of the tribes, And you remember the Richard Blumenthal was attorney general then, and Lowell Weicker was governor, and they were fierce opponents of the first two casinos. Mm-hmm. And the Weicker people, I remember this very clearly, said if that casino, if there's a casino, it's going to mean a huge spike in tuberculosis in Connecticut. And I remember I said, tuberculosis? How is that? And then
people lick the poker chips.
Yes. And they're talking. It was number two. It was increase in tuberculosis. The number one was prostitution. Mm-hmm. But number two, prostitution does not bother anyone at the legislature.
No, but they want to know they want to be sure the prostitutes don't have tuberculosis.
Yes.
That's all they really
ask. Yes, or have to wear badges.
Well, I mean, are casinos really that bad when we know that there's other tribes out there with payday loan businesses that they run to support their tribe?
I'm talking like Oklahoma and stuff like that. Yeah. Well, I think in Connecticut we have to just look at casinos for what they are, and I do think I don't well. And we've talked this to death, but this is not a good idea. Sorry, East Windsor. Anyway, the good news is that the empty Showcase Cinemas or whatever that is in East Windsor will now be the new headquarters of CT News Junkie. They're still – right? They have a movie theater, right? Is the movie theater operational in East Windsor?
No, it's closed.
Oh, it's gone.
It's
a
vacant
multiplex.
Property.
It was a multiplex.
It was a multiplex, yeah.
Best place to go on Mondays, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
Because I don't live too far from there.
I'm sure you could get it at a reasonable price per square foot.
Yes.
All right. We have to take a quick break here. We'll come back. Oh, boy. The show's just flying by here. We will come back after this. We're back. This is The Wheelhouse. With me from CT News Junkie is Christine Stewart. Also with me from Daily Ructions and The Hartford Current is Kevin Rennie. We are having in studio with us our friends from CTN. You know, Kevin, you were saying some of your favorite shows like House of Cards and stuff like that have kind of run out. You know, wondering what to watch. Maybe you should be watching a little bit more CTN.
My 600-pound life, I understand, just ended its season run. And
but, you know, there's an easy transition from House of Cards to watching CTN,
yes,
right?
Sure.
And they've got some really good new series.
Diane Smith is full of twists and turns.
Sharky and Hutch, which is their new cop show, is great. And That's So Themis, which is a reality show. All right. So
broadcast from Florida, not Connecticut.
Also, Wives of the Program Review and Investigation Committee. Always be my favorite one. Anyway, we need to talk a little bit about the fact. Well, Kevin wants to talk about the fact that, Marco Rubio, the fact that he's coming, he's headlining the 37th annual Prescott Bush Awards Dinner, the big Republican fundraiser. It's June 4th in Stanford this year. Tickets start at $199 if you want to know. That this is symbolic to you of something else.
That we're now entering a more intensive phase of presidential candidates, Republican and Democrat, who will be visiting Connecticut between Westport and Greenwich, and then the rest of us will not see them.
Well, but why should they?
So
why?
We're not ignored because Connecticut, states, very blue states, very red states, are often ignored in the presidential campaign. But in fundraising, we are not ignored, and they show up in those towns along the southwestern Connecticut coast, and they're there a lot, and they raise a lot of money.
But they don't really hear the concerns of us here in the middle of the state.
No, they
probably don't even know where East Windsor is.
And you know what? I don't think one of them will ride on one of those new
CT fast track.
No, they certainly no one's riding that. I mean, on the,
I'm sorry, I mentioned CT fast track. What are they not going to ride?
I mean, the new railroad, Metro North.
Oh, they might ride on those. So one good thing about this, though,
who is going to ride on those?
I don't know. I just was saying that to be pleasant.
Maybe Leslie, what's his name?
Well, one thing about this is the Prescott Bush dinner, Christine. Sometimes, you know, for these dinners, it's kind of hard to get like a real marquee name to come in for something like this. But this year, since there's like 19 candidates for president, you can hardly fail to get somebody who at least has a recognizable name.
Well, what's interesting is that this dinner and this fundraiser is named after Prescott Bush. Is he the grandfather of Jeb Bush? Would that make him the grandfather of Jeb Bush?
Yep.
And you know, his who spoke there last year, actually. So
right.
He spoke there last year. as the whole John Roland indictment was coming down. So that kind of sent a pall over this Republican fundraiser last year. So hopefully this year will be a more joyous occasion for
But sort of edgy, too. They got the other guy from Florida, too.
Yeah,
you know?
That's
I mean,
true.
Which is sort of like a slightly awkward. Is it awkward?
I don't think so. Yeah. I think you'll be surprised at how much support Marco Rubio probably has in Connecticut.
Well, I won't be surprised, actually. I mean, he's charismatic, and I think he is. I mean, there's really like four or five of the 19 that are really viable, and he's one of them.
The thing is, thing about the Prescott Bush dinner is that they'll finally have someone who can really give a speech. I mean, there will be people going to hear the speech,
yeah. Yes.
Which is unusual at these dinners. Both sides, it's just unusual to.
It'd be interesting if he does decide to hit on the immigration issues, because that was Jeb Bush's big talk last year, was on immigration.
It sounds exciting. It sounds like fun. It sounds like I'd like to go. Is it really? Were you just saying that it's right after the session?
It's the day after the end of session, which means we'll be on fumes at that point.
Well, they've got time for a nap.
Maybe
cut back on the after party
maybe
a little
cut
bit.
Back they, on the party.
Yeah, they do maybe, a party after midnight, right? They do a party.
True, that's true.
So maybe
it
cut back on that
before
a little.
Midnight party
well,
starts
yes,
before
unfortunately,
midnight.
It does.
Yes.
The question is, will they actually have things done by that point? I mean, it really could get.
That would be another good thing. Get
frantic.
Your homework done.
Yes.
If you want to go see Marco Rubio, get your homework done.
Right.
It's something that's just – that's the kind of thing you're going to be saying to your kid from now on.
That's
you know?
True.
All right. We just have a few minutes here before we have to go out to a fundraising break. And so last week, you know, we talked on the Wheelhouse about this somewhat intemperate email that Minnie Gonzalez, state legislator from Hartford, had sent to I think about 25 people, including the target of the email, fellow Representative Rabimbus. And she – this is all about a very complicated thing having to do with guardians ad litem and this battle that's going on here. But she kind of broke the form that legislators usually maintain in dealing with each other, at least outwardly. Although, Kevin, you might be prepared to tell us that really the only thing that was going on here was that the kind of language and aggression that people directed each other in the legislature privately went public. But it seemed like
– And also, you know, she hit the reply all button instead of the reply. That's all.
No, the postscript. I mean, she intended to
right.
send it.
Yeah,
to,
there was a taunt at the end.
Intent,
but
yeah.
How do you
troubles.
Like this?
Yeah.
You know,
her,
how do you like them apples, Representative right. Rabimbus? Name spelled wrong. So, but there's sort of been some pushback now, you know, and a bunch of Latino legislators have and leaders from around the state. They have complained to the Hartford Current that the editorial against Minnie Gonzalez was too strong, and that it even sort of seems to dovetail with criticism of Supreme Court Justice Carmen Espinoza. And so I don't know. What do we make of all this?
Well, you know, that's an interesting point about Justice Espinoza is that four of her colleagues on the Supreme Court were, I thought, grossly inappropriate in saying that her dissenting opinion in a famous, well-known case –
Richard LaPointe case.
Right.
Yeah.
Was brought dishonor to the court. I mean,
unbefitting was the term they used. I think.
Well, I think they said dishonor.
They said dishonor.
Okay. Yes, yes.
But some people thought that her dissent was intemperate. And I mean, there are
yeah, but, you know,
reasonable
the,
people may
the,
differ about
the Chief Justice was in joined in that majority opinion, and the Chief Justice should be talking about being temperate. It's a Chief Justice's job to make sure that. Conflict like that does not break out in the footnotes of the Supreme Court.
So what's going on meanwhile at the committee level? I'm just rushing along here.
Yeah, at the committee level, they are all scrambling to figure out how to get these, 45 dead bills into other bills.
And just for context, what had happened was that Minnie Gonzalez had a tantrum. Then the Republicans had a tantrum about her tantrum.
Yes.
They refused to let any business happen on the last day before the committee's deadline. And so all these bills, some of them theoretically important, died. So what's going to happen?
So they're working through that process right now. They're looking for any bill that they can amend with any of these other concepts.
Oh, horses, right? Is where they're going to do
a
horse?
Yes.
A horse.
Yeah. A horse, yes.
In the language of the legislature, the horse is where you strike all of the language of a bill except the enabling part at the beginning. But the bill has to have been through
– the bill has to have the underlying bill
germane.
Has to have some relationship to the subject matter trying to stick in there.
Yeah, and it has to have been through the appropriate committees. Right?
Not necessarily.
I don't know my horse rules, apparently.
No, not necessarily. But I do think you raised an important point, which is Minnie Gonzalez getting a lot of a lot of attention, unwanted attention on this. But the Republicans should not have done what they did. They should have been more mature about it. And even have said
– both their houses.
Well, and even have said, look, go pick 15 bills and we'll do those. And then, you know, to take our stand, we'll do something. We'll kill the others. But no, not the –
yeah.
Not
usually,
all
usually you torment somebody with one bill, right? Here's this bill you like so much.
Right.
Here's your bill about organic grass landscaping. You know, we're going to kill that thing. But no, this is like everything. This is the nuclear option. All right. We're going to take a quick break. This is The Wheelhouse. This is Colin McEnroe. I'm guest hosting with Kevin Rennie and Christine Stewart. John's out on the West Coast. He's filming the revival episodes of Full House. He plays DJ's new husband. She grew up. She got divorced. Now she's dating John. I mean, in the series, in the reality of the show. And welcome back to The Wheelhouse with me, Christine Stewart from CT News Junkie, and Kevin Rennie from Daily Ructions and The Hartford Current, and East newsman Jeff Cohen, who's joining us for a segment I like to call Sauce for the Goat. And the reason I like to call it Sauce for the Goat is it sounds better than A Drug-Selling Bazaar for Suburbanites, although that was the second title that we considered for this segment. No, we're calling it Sauce for the Goat because that was one of the many, many felicitous phrases turned by Senate Republican leader Len Fasano as they considered this interesting proposal. So we, as all of you probably know by now, we have a plan for a baseball stadium. We have a site for the baseball stadium. We have a team that we have taken from another town. We have just about everything we need except maybe – exactly enough money. So one of the plans, Jeff Cohen, was to go to the legislature and ask for what you and I, in our close reading of this legislation, decided was sort of a unique concept. There are ways in which this the state admissions tax is used or exempted for other kinds of worthy activities. But Hartford's proposing something different, right?
That's right. So let's back up and say the state gives money to municipalities for economic development programs all of the time. What makes this unique is the method or the mechanism by which the city of Hartford wants it to be done. The city needs – it has a roughly $56 to $60 million stadium. It needs to pay $4.26 million a year in debt service. It has pledged to the city's taxpayers that none of that money will come from them, that all of that money will be generated by the project. One of those line items is an admissions tax, and the city has always said we're going to go to the legislature and seek a change in the law that would let us get that state admissions tax. What's an admissions tax? Every time you go to a venue, most venues in the state, for an entertainment purpose, you get charged a 10% fee on your ticket, know it or not, and that fee goes to the state and it goes to the state's general fund and the state spends it as it wants to spend it. In this case, what the city is asking the state to do is not to exempt it from the admissions tax, but rather to – they're asking the state to collect that money into a piggy bank for the city. I almost made a goat bank analogy, but I didn't. To collect it, put it in a piggy bank and then send the piggy bank to the city to help it pay its debt service. And they think that's going to be about 10% of the annual debt service. So that's the unique proposal. It is essentially a different way of getting state tax dollars to fund a program. It's got – to fund the city's debt service.
And we should say that – let's go to the first Segarra clip here. So Mayor Segarra said, you know, we didn't ask you for anything else, right? Let's hear that clip.
We didn't ask the state for bonding money. We didn't ask the state for any additional resources. We simply want the opportunity for people who choose to go to the game to be able to pay for part of our debt.
Although Christine, not only did they not ask the state for anything, they didn't tell the state anything either, right? I mean, that's sort of part of the baggage here.
That is. No, they have not included the state in any of these conversations. And, you know, Governor Malloy at the very beginning was like, I don't want to be caught in the middle of this battle between these two towns over this baseball team.
Which might explain why they didn't go to the state bonding commission.
Right.
That is true. It's true.
You know, if
then
you don't have
like
the governor on your
door,
side,
yeah.
Good luck getting that through the bond commission.
So then well, you can't even get it on the bond commission agenda and without the governor's support.
It's the first ever don't ask, don't tell stadium. So
stealth stadium.
But what happens? So as far as the bonding is concerned, I guess my question is, you know, have you promised this admissions tax will be able to support the stadium in order to get these bonds?
I have not promised
that. Or have we not gone to the bondholder?
Well, no, they do. They have an answer for that, right? I mean, do they have an on-the-record answer about that?
They do have an on the record. So the question, I guess, otherwise put, is what happens if the admissions tax doesn't come through?
Okay.
And the city says, oh, we've conservatively budgeted in all of these accounts such that as one falls through, we can sort of make it up. Other, you know, we'd be okay.
See, like we started the program talking about how they can always find a way. They don't need the admissions tax. See, they can find a way.
And there has been some pushback from other state legislators. Let's hear Rick Lopez, who, and I think this is a total coincidence, but he's a Democrat from New Britain.
So on a lot of different levels, I have to say I have a real problem with this bill. It's inconsistent. It's unfair for municipality news. Other municipality, and most dearly to me, it's very unfair to the municipality that lost the Rock Cats. It smells, we'd say it smells like a rat, but I think it smells like a yard goat a little bit here.
This is one of the unfortunate things about calling your team the yard goat. It brings up all kinds of opportunities. I believe Senator Fasano said that other – because this piece of legislation, Kevin, will stick out like a sore thumb. If you look at the actual general statute on admissions tax, it sticks out like a sore thumb. It says, you know, various other, you know, like nonprofits and certain other baseball teams are exempt from the sales tax. And then there's like two huge sections that say, on the other hand, Hartford's going to have this weird thing we've never done before. And that's actually the statutory language.
It will be like what we're doing, what they're trying to do for Tesla.
Right.
That the legislature spends a lot of time, some might say too much time, some might even say all their time, fighting over exemptions of laws that apply broadly for people who have connections.
So Jeff, like what did the city come up with any other argument here for this? Like when in talking to the legislature, like why should the legislature do something like that?
Well, so the main argument is, look, the pushback that we've gotten also is, look, this is not state tax money as you would otherwise conceive it. This is money generated by – it's like a user fee is their argument. It is money paid by users of the park – who, hey, just want to help subsidize the park. And so why can't the money that is generated by a project in the city that was built and mostly paid for or will be paid for by the city, why can't that money stay in the city? That's the argument that they're making. And the problem is, I mean, a problem is, there was a decent amount of opposition. I don't know who organized it, but there was a guy from a motorway somewhere who was like, yes, by the way, if you're considering that exemption, we would also like the exemption. And there was, you know, I mean, so
hence,
or not an exemption.
Hence the sauce for the goat thing. What sauce for the goat is something else
why
for the highway.
Why not the tax on beer and hot dogs staying in this? I mean, that's where it logically leads. Probably they would like that, but it does do some damage to the integrity of the tax system.
It does, and I think the honest reality is that it's difficult to make your case in Hartford at the legislature when you've had, you know, at the tail end of a bumpy week that was caused, as you were talking about before, by a Hartford legislator in Minnie Gonzalez. It's hard to come with your hat in your hand for a project that you didn't really ask the state's involvement on. Politically, it's not an easy proposition, which gets to the question for you guys who study the legislature more than I do. Why put it in a form of a bill? John Fonfara is the head of the Finance, Revenue, and Bonding Commission. Couldn't this mysteriously appear last minute in an implementer bill in the middle of the night?
How dare you suggest such a thing?
What it tells you is that it doesn't have a lot of support at the moment.
And right. If they thought they could do it as an implementer, that's how they would have done it.
Right. Right. Because they know they're not going to be able to do that and the stakes are too high. And I'm sure they have been warned off that.
Yeah. I mean, it looked, Christine, like implementer language. When I first read it looked so much like an implementer. And that must mean that they can't have it as an implementer.
Well, I mean, the chances are, you know, he is the head of the Finance Committee.
Senator Fonfara, the Hartford
Senator. So he will be in those closed-door negotiations at the end on the state budget. So
being told he can't have this.
If this – well, possibly, you know. Yeah, he might be able to get something in there, some back and forth.
Somebody else wants something.
But he has said at various times that he really believes that – that's how legislation should be shaped and created in the end is in a room with a closed door and a few interested people
who've been drinking. So I just I mean, to me, what makes this probably a non-starter is this is a tax, this admissions tax that the state has to quote unquote wear. You know, in other words, if you're crazy enough to actually look at your ticket and try to figure this out, what you're seeing, what Joe Sixpack sees is, what's this? I'm getting charged by the state for my admission to my baseball game. I mean, it looks like a state tax, and because it always looks like a state tax because that's what it is, the state admissions tax. And what they're really suggesting is that Joe Sixpack is going to get mad at the state, but the state will not be allowed to keep the money, in the case of Hartford, that Joe Sixpack attending this Yard Goats game is mad about. It's going to go someplace else. And I don't think the state likes to have to wear a tax that it's actually going to have to give back to somebody else.
Well, and the state would be giving up this money at a time when it really can't afford to be giving up any money at all. This would be revenue to the state, and the state is hurting for that.
There's that
is
too.
It more important than, in, for instance, mammograms for Medicaid patients? No,
I
not.
Don't know because I haven't read
and
the Republican
what,
budget yet.
Right. That's,
well, I mean, what, a $426,000
right,
in revenue could keep open the Meriden satellite campus of Middlesex Community College.
Also provide honor guards at veterans' funerals.
But to the city's defense, and their I think its point is, look, this is money that is otherwise not coming to the state, but for our investment. And by the way, we're giving you those hot dog revenues and those beer revenues. So what's the –
And they'll take the ticket revenues as well. Thank you.
We actually – well, actually, I'm going to wrap up this. We actually have Mayor Cigar saying that, but you just said it yourself. So I'd like to save a little bit of time here for the never-ending and sort of losing its own structure and contours set of questions about the Hartford registrars, who are fine and wonderful people. There used to be three of them. Now there's two. They're just not that good at running elections. That's being held against them. Jeff, give us an update here. First of all, what happened? Hartford lost a court battle about whether they can just kick these particular registrars out.
Right. So let's back up. Right. 2014 was a really bad election in the city of Hartford. People couldn't – some polls were closed or they didn't open on time. They didn't have the voting books in time. Then once they people were turned away from the polls, once the voting was done, they couldn't even agree on an accurate tally of how many people voted. There were like three different tallies, and I think that remains unresolved. So there were issues, and everybody wanted to do something to fix the problem. The legislature wants to do some of their various bills that are living and dying in the legislature based on lots of things, I suppose. And then the city council wanted to flex some of its own muscle, and it held it hired attorneys, and it held an investigation, and then decided to bring charges against the three registrars, essentially saying they were not doing their
bad
job.
Bad registrars.
Yeah.
That they're incompetent, which – obviously the election didn't go well. The registrars would say, look, we're not incompetent. We're underfunded and we're part of a broader political system that is out to get us. So the city council started this process. They were going to actually formally begin what is essentially known – would have been a trial. And Ross Garber, attorney in the city, would have been – this. It was to be the city's essentially prosecutor. But the registrars filed suit. And last week, a state court judge said, actually, City of Hartford, you don't have the authority in your charter that you say you do. And hey, there we are. And then the city, you would have thought, might have appealed that decision. But Wednesday. On Monday, the council decided, look, it's going to be too expensive. It's going to take us a year and a half. We tried.
Why bother?
So, please do.
But it is – it shows you sort of the swings and roundabouts. Ross Garber essentially made the defense argument for John Rowland in that the legislature didn't have authority in their impeachment proceedings against him.
When
he
was staff counsel to the governor. He wasn't John Rowland's lawyer. He was the governor's lawyer. Yes, whoever the governor might have been at that
whoever
moment.
Whoever it might have been. Yes.
Okay, it's an important distinction.
Yes.
Do they run for re-election?
Well, I before that, just you know, there are bills up there, and obviously the Secretary of State Denise Merrill wants to do something. I mean, is anything going to happen up there on the Hill vis-a-vis registrars? Statewide?
The registrars are a very powerful lobby, and I don't see that the Secretary of State's been able to get any traction on her bill to boil it down to one registrar.
So can we just stop and let that soak in? I mean, the sentence to most people that the registrars are a very powerful lobby is a very – how is that? I don't go up there very often.
They run elections. Want to get elected or don't you?
In the legislators' hometowns, they're active. Each one is very active in each – in the party they belong to. They're familiar faces. They're the ones who sort of help you through the process of getting on the ballot at your caucus or town committee or getting petitions.
They have the voter list.
They have the voter list.
Well, and, see, some of them do.
Some of them do.
See, that's
yes.
your problem. You're used to Hartford registrars who – let's go back another year to 2013 when there was a ballot question about whether the registrars should be allowed to continue to exist. And in fact – the city voted that the registrars shouldn't continue to exist in their current form. Usually, you know, if you're in charge of the election and there's a ballot question eliminating your job, you should be able to figure out something to do about that.
This is when you get deep into the weeds of the registrar situation. And there was a ballot question that essentially said – that gave the city the authority in its charter to appoint its registrars. And so the question is, will there be an election next time around or will they necessarily be appointed?
Yeah, might not.
And that's –
Nobody
that's
knows. One of those many things nobody knows. Thank you so much, Christine Stewart. Read CT News Junkie all the time. And then on Sundays, read me and Kevin Rennie in the Hartford Current. Actually, we're usually up online before that. Thanks to Ace Newsman Jeff Cohn and to Tucker Ives and Sydney Laro and everybody else who helped out today.